The University of Kansas Health System is proud to be the official healthcare provider of the Kansas City Current. From youth athletes to the pros, we put player care first to turn their dreams into reality. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/kccurrent.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati with Jake Gutierrez. Thank you so much for joining us on this rainy Thursday, July 30th, 2020. Could we please get a round of applause from the studio audience to welcome in a brand new member of the ACC, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Tim Grunhardt.
Now let's just hope that they play games. Now that we have a schedule, we don't have the dates yet. We have the home and away games, but now that we have a schedule, let's hope that they play games. So we're crossing our fingers on that. You know, the funny thing is, there's been a bunch of tweets out there before that, you know, Notre Dame shouldn't be in the playoffs because they have a week independent schedule. And blah, 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 this, this, and that. Now that they're in the ACC, their schedule actually got easier because they joined the ACC. So by joining a conference, their schedule got easier. So bizarro world, here we are here with COVID-19 dictating the action as we progress through this wonderful life of ours.
Which division are you guys going to be in?
There's no divisions this year.
No divisions.
So there's no divisions, and
Never keep the ACC division straight. Like, one was the Coastal and one was the Atlantic.
What's the difference, right?
Here's the rundown real quick. The season will begin, this is what the schedule is, the week of September 7th through the 12th. Each team will play 11 games with two open dates, 10 conference games, and one non-con, which must be in team's home state.
Right.
Notre Dame will play full ACC schedule and is eligible to compete in the ACC championship game that will take place either December 12th or the 19th in Charlotte. And the Notre Dame TV revenue will be split among all 15 ACC
schools. There you
go. So get off that pile of money, baby.
Yep.
Split it up.
We're going to share. I mean, that's just what we have to do in this country, is we got to take care of each other now that this COVID-19 thing. So we're going to share some of the NBC money. And listen, it's great for Notre Dame, and now that they have a schedule and they know kind of who they're going to play. So the ACC kind of did them a solid by letting them join the conference. Now, remember, Notre Dame is in the ACC and every other conference. Every other sport except for football. And that's kind of dictated more or less by the NBC contract. There's a lot of different things that they are mandated from that contract that they have to live up to in order to keep the contract solid. And a lot of it's like seven home games and some different things that other conferences are like, listen, we're not going to do that. But because of this whole change and because of the whole craziness right now of college football and what position they're put into, there'll be only six home games this year. Now, the one thing that is kind of in limbo right now is that because of that rule that you just read about, they have to play in their home state, which I think is for two reasons. Number one, it's because of the natural rivalries in the ACC and the SEC. So you look at Georgia Tech, they can play because they're in state. Now, obviously, you have South Carolina and Clemson is another one. That they want to keep those rivalries. But now they have to play in the state of Indiana. Now, Notre Dame was going to play in Ireland against Navy, and then that was pushed back, and that was canceled. Then they were going to go play in Indianapolis in Maryland. Maryland is not an ACC state, so that means that if Navy wants to play against Notre Dame, then they're going to have to come to the state of Indiana to play, which I'm not sure they want to do that. It just causes a lot of logistical problems. The other thing is they could play in Indianapolis, they could play in some different places. But remember, a lot of these NFL cities and NFL stadiums do not want college football games in there because they're limiting fans, just like Arrowhead, which we really don't know yet what they're going to let people do. And college, you're not really sure what they're going to let people do as far as going to games. But NFL is going to be probably more stringent than college football. So, yeah, I mean, they're probably not going to be able to play in Indianapolis. So Navy's going to have to probably come to Notre Dame, and whether they want to do that or not remains to be seen. So, they do play Arkansas That was canceled. They do play Western Michigan, which is an option. I think they want to keep the Navy game, but Navy's going to have to take one on the chin and come back out to Notre Dame again, so we'll see what happens with that. But the rule was that they have to play in the state of Indiana. And the other thing is they don't want a lot of travel. So in the ACC, if you're they kind of want you to stay in your state so that it's a bus ride instead of a plane ride, which makes sense because of, you know, just the logistics of this virus that we're dealing with.
Let me play a couple of clips here from Heather Dinich, ESPN college football reporter. She was talking about this. And again, for people that don't know, Tim's son plays for Notre Dame. Tim played at Notre Dame. And Tim watches Rudy every Wednesday night. So yeah, I mean, Rudy night tonight in your household.
And I know people are like, you know, I don't want to talk about Notre Dame. But
I do because it affects everything else.
Well, there you go. That's exactly right. Blueprint from the ACC, I believe, is going to happen in the Big 12 and the SEC.
They've already gone no divisions in the Big 12, Ronnie. So, you know.
Yeah, so no divisions in the Big 12, but they don't have a
champion. I'm just glad to see all the Power 5 conferences in alignment and getting together and just and putting out a plan together.
That's not how we do things in this country, dude.
No, it's not.
Let's hear the finished comments and we'll have Timmy react to those. There's a lot here. First, here's Heather Dinich. How does the ACC decision affect other conferences?
Well, let's start with the SEC. And right before we got on the show here, I got a statement from Greg Sankey, the SEC commissioner. He said he's not about to speculate on anything that might be floating out there. He said, we continue our discussions focused on the return of fall sports, including football. We will announce any decisions at the appropriate time. That's a statement from SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey. I can tell you that the SEC presidents have a regularly scheduled, previously scheduled, I should say, video conference tomorrow. So everybody's watching that. Big 12 Conference Commissioner Bob Bowlesby told me that the Big 12 presidents are going to be meeting on Monday, and they will be presented 4 or 5 different scheduling models. He said, we are going to arm them with all the information they need to make a decision if that's what they want to do.
Shockingly, what I heard there is that the Big 12 is going to basically do whatever the SEC does.
Yeah.
Well, about time. You know what? Boy, Big 12, about time you started falling in line.
There you go.
Let's hear from Bob Bowlesby. Since he was very talkative yesterday. Let's hear a couple of clips, and then, Timmy, we'll get your thoughts. Okay. Since she brought up Bob Bowlesby.
You might need a glass of water.
That's a fun name to say, Bowlesby.
Bob Bowlesby.
You need a glass of water to get through a Bob Bowlesby soundbite, though, because it's usually pretty dry.
Wow. Unbelievable criticism from Nathan Katie towards Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlesby.
Some gator gum.
Here, Bob Bowlesby. It is a fun name to say. Bob Bowlesby. Bob Bowlesby talks about spring as an option for college football.
I definitely hear them. I think the spring is a viable option. I don't think it's first choice. As I said earlier, I think you go to that by default, and there may be an opportunity for that. It could turn out that we can't start the football season. It could turn out that we get disrupted broadly enough that we have to shutter the season. It could be that some schools will be able to keep going and others will have to stop. There are a number of scenarios. We could get to the point where the testing is not available or the turnaround time is not satisfactory. And our doctors and scientists could say, what you're doing is not going to work going forward, so you need to stop. And if that happens at a time where we can pivot to the spring, I have no problem with that. I just don't think that's the kind of thing you do preemptively.
It could be that I fall asleep during this answer.
Bowlesby.
It could be that Coca-Cola was 25 cents when I was a boy.
And a Hershey bar was a dime.
What?
A dime.
So what do you have to say about what Heather Dinich and Bob Bowlesby...
Well, let's start with the spring thing. I was just in South Bend last weekend and played golf with a couple guys that are probably going to get drafted in the first two or three rounds.
Give me some names.
Next spring. Liam Eichelberg is his name. He's the offensive tackle, one of the tight ends. And there was a couple of guys that we visited with about. So they've talked to their agents, and this is what's going to happen. And you're kind of seeing it already with what happened with the cornerback from Virginia Tech. What you're going to see is you're going to see, if it goes to the spring, that a bunch of guys are going to opt out and they will not play football, and it'll water down the product. Now, listen, we just want the product. We want football. So whatever it is, it is. So if you have to play in the spring, then you got to play in the spring. But just know that there will be at least 10 to 15%. And most of the best players of each team will not play because they don't want to take a chance of getting hurt, or they want to be able to train and do all the things that they want to do to get ready for the NFL. So that is a definite thing that's going to happen. So just count
how many
on that.
People do you think will hold out if they play in the fall? Because we've already had one guy, or not hold out.
I think you're going to see
Caleb
some people.
Farley. Yeah. For people that don't know, let me mention this. Yeah. Virginia Tech cornerback Caleb Farley became the first highly touted 2021 NFL draft prospect to opt out of playing college football. He did this yesterday. He released a video to ESPN explaining why he won't be suiting up for the Hokies this season, and he is a very highly touted NFL draft prospect.
Well,
who we're referencing.
So here's the thing. You know, we were talking a little bit about opting out, and for college kids, I think it's a little bit different than NFL kids and NFL guys. And this is the reason why I think there are some NFL guys that, first of all, have some health concerns, and I'm sure there's some college guys that do too. But there are also NFL guys that have children that may have some issues, that have wives that may have some issues, that have family members that have some issues, that are living close to them. And I'm not saying this is all college players, but most college players don't live at home. So they are basically, and I don't want to call it a bubble because it's not, because it's too big of a bubble, but they're basically on the campus of the school. So it's not like they're running into their grandmother unless it's a game day. And then if it's a game day and your grandmother is sick, then don't bring her to the game. You know, I hate to say that, but you don't want to put people who are immune deficient or have issues, you don't want to put them in that situation anyway. So when you look at it as far as opting out, there's more reason for NFL guys to opt out because they do have concerns with family members. Their family, we live with their families, right? They have wives, they have kids. College, like Colin, as just for prime example, if he said I'm opting out because I don't want to get any of my family sick, I'd be like, what are you talking about? We're not even around you. So why would that be a reason? So you have that. Now, once again, if it's a man's decision, you make a man's decision and stick with it. If you think that you're going to get sick or you're going to have issues with your health because of football, then you step out and say you don't want to play. And then, you know what? You know, more power to you. You've decided to make that choice. But let's talk about the spring. The spring is going to be it'll be a little bit different because there won't be a lot of people playing. And I think you see guys like Trevor Lawrence won't play for Clemson. I think you see some of the top players opt out, and if that's what college football wants. But that may be dictated to them, so I don't know. But I think all of us obviously want to play in the fall. But if not the fall, you want something. You want spring football. So we'll see what happens.
You know, and we've already seen a little bit of a precursor to this with guys like Christian McCaffrey deciding not to play in their bowl games. You know, that they're making career decisions. Right. And so you can understand also that some guys that think, hey, look, I'm going to get drafted. And so it's not just the COVID risk necessarily. It could be in a situation like this, in a season like this, instead of taking all the hits, instead of exposing myself to something that I don't really know what the long-term effects are, I'm going to go ahead and work out all season and get myself ready for the draft.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that's the right or wrong thing, but we're already starting to see more and more players who know that they're going to get drafted decide to eliminate that risk of playing in bowl games. So this is kind of a logical next step, isn't it?
Well, I didn't get to my point, which I apologize for that. I do that all the time. It's one of my things I always try to work on.
You have
on.
So many points to make. It's hard to get to all of them.
My point was that they've all these guys that are going to have the opportunity to get drafted have visited with the agents that they would hire. A lot of these guys haven't hired, but they're visiting. You know, remember, agents are courting these guys all the time, so they do ask for advice from agents, and they ask advice from lawyers, and they ask advice for coaches and everything else. You see it in college basketball all the time when people decide to leave early.
Mm-hmm.
So what they've said is, listen, if you have a high grade, you should probably opt out. because if you have a first or second round grade, why go out there and play in the spring and put yourself in a bad position and get hurt? You're not going to really gain anything from that, because the draft will probably go back to the original draft date, and they will go and take care of business that way. So you're going to see a lot of people opt out if it goes to the spring. Now, you still have football, but you're just not going to have a lot of the superstars that you're used to seeing on a college football field. And I think it's going to happen more and more as we get closer to the season. You're going to see, even in the fall, you're going to see guys opting out. Once one guy does it, I would say within the next 2 to 3 weeks, you'll see at least a half a dozen guys or a dozen guys opt out.
Hey, NFL, same thing.
Yeah,
there's already 30 guys that have opted out. We're still gonna watch that, right?
Yep. I'm watching it, and I'll be excited. Yeah. And guess what? My kid will probably get a better opportunity to play. So it doesn't really bug me that much. But in reality, listen, you make a decision and you stand by it. And I have no problem with these guys that are opting out of the NFL. I've got no problem with the guys that are opting out of college. And, if you feel that that's something you want to do, then you go ahead and do it. That's something I wouldn't do unless I had a sick child or a sick wife at home that I would personally affect if I went and played. I would not. I would not play if that was a situation. But if it was a situation where my kids were all healthy, my wife is healthy, I'm going to have to trust in the NFL and trust in the NFLPA, and that they're looking out for my best interest. They're giving me the best opportunity to be safe and healthy, and then go with it. And if it proves that that's wrong, then you know what? The league's going to end anyways. It'll stop playing.
We have Tim Grunhardt in studio. Speaking of opting out, we'll talk about Damian Williams after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Four wide, Mahomes in the gun, shotgun snap, fakes the handoff, rolls and throws a gentle pass, caught with the leap at the five to the pylon on the near side by Williams. Touchdown! He got in! The Chiefs have taken the lead in Super Bowl 54 with 2:44 to go! Under center, Mahomes, second down, six from the 38. Hand off to Williams. Got a block from the fullback. He's at the 35. The 30 breaks a tackle on the sideline. 20 chasing him down the sideline. The 10. The 5. Touchdown! That's it! That's it! A 38-yard touchdown run by Damian Williams.
And it seems to be game over, Chief.
Oh, I love hearing that.
Welcome back to the show. This is the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Tim Grunhardt, your reaction to Damian Williams opting out for the 2020 season?
Well, it was a big story until Patrick Mahomes moved to four. And then that story was kind of forgotten. No, listen, I don't know. I don't know what the logistics are and the problems that Damian has to worry about, whether he has sick family members or he's just worried about getting sick. And I know it's a tough decision. Every play I played, I cherished. Every game I played was special to me, and being around my teammates and being able to play next to Dave Zott and Will Shields for 9 years, and unless it was something really, really serious and something really, really deadly that I had to worry about in my family or for me, I would decide to play and not leave those guys and put them in a position where they were going to suffer a little bit. That's just the way my mindset was. Now, with Damian, I feel for him that he had to make that decision, but I do think that, there are a lot of mitigating circumstances that need to be answered. And, is he worried about the first round draft choice coming in and taking away snaps? Is he worried that, I'm not going to go out there and not play very much and put myself in a position where, I'm sitting on the bench and I'm exposing myself to something that I don't want to be exposed to? There's just a lot of things that are probably rolling through his mind. And I think we all look at this listen, be honest with yourself. When you heard this, you thought the first thing that popped in my mind is, well, he's worried about that first round draft choice, taking his snaps away. So why not just rest a year and then go somewhere else and play? And as a running back, you know, the tread on the tires wear out pretty quick. So why put yourself in a position to burn the tread a little bit when you're probably not going to play as much? So I don't know. I feel for these guys that they had to make this decision. I really do. I'm glad I never had to make this decision.
He's looked upon as the guy going into the season. He's always had he's always been up against it for playing time, for snaps. Think he really would have that mindset?
I don't know. I mean, there's got to be something to it. You draft a first-round draft choice. Hey, look at Aaron
Rodgers. If he's going to come out with a statement that details his thinking. Some guys have done that. Some guys haven't. They don't owe anybody an explanation necessarily. I know the only clue we have is Brett Veach said that, you know, we know that it was made in the best interest of his family.
Yeah.
So
there you go. I mean, and you got to make those decisions. You're right. I mean, I don't know.
A counterpoint to it could be that if you are worried about it, that maybe that's more incentive not to opt out. You know, more incentive to play because, you know, he's a rookie and now he's going to have a chance. You're opening up the door for a rookie to go out there and get all the playing time and get all the experience. So that's got to be a little bit scary for a running back, too, to think, okay, there's that kind of Wally Pipp syndrome a little bit,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
So it's
you can sit out this year and then next year's your contract year. I mean, that's he's signed through 2021. I think maybe more of that than him worrying about Edwards-Helaire. You know, it just in terms of, hey, this is a shortened season. I've had less time to prepare. I don't want to go out and get hurt this year and then coming off an injury going into a contract year.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of mitigating circumstances that I think that
are involved. And we're all guessing.
Yeah, it's all speculation. Yeah. You know, one thing that I was reading yesterday, and this is where I think I try to put myself in the shoes like you're talking about of what the decision-making process would be like for a player, and everybody's different. Everybody's got different family circumstances. The fact that just more and more studies keep coming out about the disease, and there was one yesterday, like in Germany, they've been studying it, and they're finding that people that didn't go even have to get hospitalized by this, they've been studying their hearts, and there's been a high incidence of cases of inflamed hearts and the kind of damage that happens to somebody that's had a heart attack. And I know a bunch of the sporting players had told me when they were trying to decide if they were going to go down to this bubble was they were worried about the effects of the lungs because you can't play soccer if you don't have just like the greatest lung capacity possible, the fitness you have to play. And I could see that's a consideration if you're a player going, okay, well, if I can track this, what if there's long-range heart damage that happens to this, and how's that going to affect my career? I don't know. Nobody knows what the right answers are because these are just studies that are coming out now, and they're not confirmed yet. They're just preliminary studies, and you got to make this decision in real time. That's a tough spot to be in.
It is a tough spot to be in, but you know, in a different kind of way, you're making that decision already because anytime you walk onto the football field, you have an opportunity to be paralyzed for the rest of your life.
That's true. Yeah.
You have an opportunity to have concussions and work into CTE and those kind of issues.
Yep.
You know, there's all kinds of different things that can happen when you walk across that white line and play. So, and listen, I am not downplaying the effects of this COVID-19 thing, but when you are a football player, really any sports, but especially football, when you make that decision to go ahead and play and walk on the field, you know there are mitigating circumstances that, you know, you could lose your life on the football helmet itself.
Right.
There is a warning that says that injury and death could occur by playing this sport. So if that's on your football helmet as a warning, then you know that, you know, anytime you do that, you have the opportunity or you open yourself up to, you know, putting yourself in a bad, bad situation. So those decisions have been made, and, you know, so you have to make a decision. Now with this virus, people are making a decision that, you know, they don't want to play, and that's their decision. But they've already made the decision to put their health and themselves in harm's way by playing the game of football.
Mm-hmm.
My first reaction was, will I once again go into my fantasy football draft night with Chad Boger and friends and shock the room and draft I drafted Kareem Hunt his rookie year. I drafted Patrick Mahomes in the first round, before, you know, now you think, oh, big deal. But when it happened, before he had started his full, I got hissed and booed and everything else, and it turned out wonderful. I just, the first reaction was, will I draft Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the first round if given the opportunity.
Those
what does this do to the stock of Clyde Edwards-Helaire?
The arrow is certainly pointing up. You know, obviously, as a rookie, you're going to make some mistakes and you're going to do some things that, you know, just are part of the maturation process of playing in the NFL. But this guy, listen, he's got some special skills that have been shown throughout his college years playing in the highest level in the SEC and playing for an excellent football team, that when he gets the ball in space, he's special. He can make people miss, and he's going to make people miss in the NFL. The other thing that he does is he really runs the ball very well. He hides and he dodges and he scats very well through the line of scrimmage, which I think you're going to see. And then his pluck ability of being able to catch the ball is second to none. So this guy's got a lot of skills and a great skill set to play in this offense. So, listen, I wish Damian Williams would play. I think his teammates probably wish he'd play, but they probably understand and know that, hey, listen, he doesn't feel comfortable, and he's not the first guy, and he won't be the last guy to opt out. There's going to be more guys to do it. One of the things that you have to realize is once you say, I don't want to play anymore, there's somebody banging on that door to come in and play. There is somebody who wants to take your spot and is willing to go in there and willing to take the chance and willing to, you know, give himself an opportunity. You guys know that whole last chance you deal that's going on. That just opened up in streaming on Netflix, so I've been checking it out.
I watched the first episode last night. Very good.
They go back to California now?
Laney College, yes. Which I recruited when I was at KU. There are guys that are sleeping in their cars. There are guys that drive three or 4 hours. There are guys that have zero money that are trying to live in California. And you know how expensive it is. And just for the opportunity to play football, to go to college, to maybe, just maybe, play in the NFL. So, you know, there's always somebody waiting in the wings. My dad used to say this all the time. There's somebody always waiting in the wings. So, you know, waiting in the wings, and there's people waiting in the wings. So by you stepping down, you're giving somebody an opportunity to play. And, you know, the future is not promised to anybody. Now, once again, you can't sit here and make a decision or say something negative about a decision made when you're not in the shoes of that person. I am just talking about me, myself, and I, all right? I would play unless my son or my daughter had a mitigating circumstance that if I brought home COVID that he would or she would pass or be very, very sick. I would not put that on my kids. I'll give you a prime example. My nephew is very, very sick. He's got Hodgkin's lymphoma. And we are right now going through, he needs bone marrow transplant. And you know, the whole deal is, you know, you want family members. And both my daughter and my son, the swimmer and the football player, said that they would be happy to skip their seasons if they test positive for him to give their bone marrow.
If they were a match.
They would Oof. Step down from swimming and football and do this thing, because you can't do it after you give the bone marrow. There's a lot that goes into this.
Oh, it's
whole
an
bone
incredibly
marrow.
Painful process. It's yeah, that's
so.
And I
got the chills when they said that to me. And then they're going to go through that process. And you know, if they're a match, they're a match. His sister is a 10 out of 10 match, but she's pregnant, so she can't do it. So there's just a lot of things that you have to deal with.
So the numbers on Clyde Edwards-Helaire, when it comes to things like, you know, chance to win Rookie of the Year, all that stuff, the Vegas numbers just shot up massively.
Yeah.
With this, and you know, we talked when Steven said that about Kareem Hunt. I remember I had Kareem Hunt in my my fantasy league his rookie year. Overdrafted him, turned out to be a great pick, but then I also took Darwin Thompson last year, and I did not.
That didn't work out for
that
you.
That did not pay for me as well. But what about the challenges for a rookie like this, like Edwards-Helaire, coming in, especially considering he missed, you know, there was no rookie camp, there was no OTAs. How hard, or because we do see rookies come in sometimes though, and boom, they hit the ground running at the running back position.
In my experiences with young guys, I think when he has the ball in his hands, you're going to see special things from him. The question is when he doesn't.
Right.
You know, is he going to be able to pick up the blitz? Is he going to be able to pick up the offensive sets and a lot of the things that go on without the ball in your hand? I think if you get the ball in his hands out in space, the natural instincts are going to kick in and he's going to do the special things that he's always done with that ball in his hand. But as a rookie, this all the other things that you worry about. You worry about, is he going to line up in the right formation now? You know, if there's some movement or some emotion stuff, is he going to leave at the right time? Is he going to pick up the blitz, and can he pick up the blitz? When you got a linebacker that is 6'4", about 240 pounds, and run a 4.440 that's blitzing in that A-gap, is he going to be able to step in there and put his nose in his chest and bring his feet and stop him at the point? Those are all things that I worry about with a young football player that he's going to have to show us that he can do. Anytime he has a ball in his hands, you're going to see special play out of him. But that's just the way it is. I mean, that's the way rookies are.
Here's what Nate was referencing. Adam Teicher tweeted this out last night. Caesars shifted its odds for Edwards-Helaire in light of Damian Williams' decision to opt out. Edwards-Helaire has gone from 250-1 to 75-1 to win NFL MVP, 75-1 to 20-1 to win rushing title, and 11-2 to 4-1 to win Offensive Rookie of the Year. And so that's how the odds shifted at Caesars. Also, James Palmer tweeted this. Grunny, do we take anything away from this? The Chiefs, while in shotgun, ran between the tackles for an NFL low 2.9 yards per carry. Clyde Edwards-Helaire last season with LSU averaged 6.9 yards per carry on runs between the tackles and shotgun.
Yeah, the thing that this guy could do is, first of all, he runs the zone very, very well. The Chiefs did a lot of you know, they did some gap stuff with counter and power, which kind of hit outside or right over the tackle. They don't really particularly hit inside. The other thing that this guy does that I think that the Chiefs are going to do a bunch of this year, and this is my one prediction that, you know, I could be completely wrong or I'm the first one to call it out. The Chiefs are going to run a bunch of draws and delays this year. They're going to, because of all the passing that they do, this kid really does a nice job of being able to get lost with the ball in the middle of of the set. So when you run these draws and you run these delays and you run, you know, kind of the offense off the pass, you need a guy like that. You need a Byron Spruill type of a guy. You need a Westbrook type of guy. So go back to watching the Philadelphia Eagles with Andy Reid, and you saw that they did do a bunch of that kind of stuff. He hasn't done that this year. The last couple of years with the Chiefs, he's ran a lot of screens. He's ran a lot of like arounds and reverses and those kind of things. But you don't see a lot of delays and draws. I think you're going to see that with this kid. So I think that they're going to pick up the number of runs between the tackles. And I think a lot of it's going to be off the pass. You know, play action pass and the kind of the zone read is kind of the flavor of the month. But if you mix in a draw, that's really, really hard to defend.
We've got Tim Grenhardt in studio back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you very much for joining us, Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati with Jake Gutierrez. We have Tim Grenhardt in the studio right now. Timmy, we already addressed it. Did you need to say anything about the NFL's top 100 before we move on?
Yeah, I can't believe that Patrick Mahomes is 4, but you know, Nate kind of set me straight here. You know, I don't care what anybody says about Nate. You know, he's always been kind of good to me. So,
right.
You know, it's nice for him to have a chip on his shoulder, and I think this is the kind of thing that Patrick Mahomes will have a chip on his shoulder about, and I think the Chiefs will too. So that's the positive, but. To put Russell Wilson and Lamar Jackson ahead of him, I don't see that. I just don't. Maybe I'm looking at it through Chiefs color glasses, but, you know, Lamar Jackson maybe, by the way, you watch. Lamar Jackson's going to have, and I'm not going to say it's this year, but he's going to fall off that pedestal. before it's all said and done. With stuff that he does and the chances that he takes, you're going to see Lamar Jackson fall faster than any other quarterback, I think, that is an MVP type of player. But, you know, I'd rather have Patrick Mahomes than either one of those two. And that's not just being a Kansas City, and that's just being, a guy who played in the NFL and a guy who watches a lot of football. I think Patrick Mahomes does some unbelievable things with that football and his leadership and the way that he handles himself. He is number one in my book. So, I didn't see the other guys. So can you go through the list? Where was Kelce at?
18.
Okay, I think I had him at 21.
Tyreek was around 22? Is that what Tyreek was?
I think I had Tyreek around 28 or 30 or something right there. Who else was on it?
Frank Clark was at the back end.
95.
Honey Badger?
Oddly enough.
Was Schwartz in there?
Matt Castle was actually number 14.
Wow. No, he was. He was
somewhat of a surprise
you're lying
for a lot of people.
Did Schwartz make it? Because that was I had Schwartz. He didn't make it?
No, I don't think. Did he?
I don't believe so.
That's ridiculous.
I'll be honest with you. I don't watch a second of any of this. I just read what the reactions are on Twitter because it tickles me.
Yeah, I mean, I think Schwartz is one of the best tackles. And I mentioned this to Frank and Soren when we were talking about this on both of those shows, that because he's a right tackle, he doesn't get the kind of respect. And this whole left tackle, right tackle thing is so overblown. It really is.
Well, we've talked about it with him, and it came up yesterday because of the Joey Bosa contract and how much they're paying him. And Joey Bosa has been dominated by Mitchell Schwartz every time they played.
Who hasn't been?
Right. And there's a lot. I mean, right.
Now, he struggled a little bit in the Super Bowl, but they all did.
He's had to go up in this division against Bosa, against Khalil Mack back when he was with the Raiders, against Von Miller. I mean,
and by the way, all those guys line up basically on the right tackle.
Right.
So this whole left tackle, right tackle thing, I blame it on Hollywood. I really do. The Blind Side has made left tackles into these like mythical characters. Now, listen, I understand the idea of the Blind Side of the quarterback and all that, but the way the quarterbacks get rid of the ball now in three steps and a lot of the zone reading stuff that they do, the tackle basically closes down. The left tackle, they always let the defensive end on the left side it would be the right side of the defense on the left side of the offense. They let him go. That's their read. So there's a lot of times when the left tackle is basically just kind of closing down and looking at the linebacker. And, and most, I would say last year the Chiefs did zone read passes. Would 20-25% be too much? Would that be a little high? Okay, let's just say 20% at the high. All right, guess who's one-on-one the whole time? The front side, the right tackle. The left tackle's closing down, and they're reading the defensive end on the left side. If he closes down hard, he pulls it and runs. If he plays it pat, then he's going to hand it off, or they're going to read the linebacker and they're going to throw the ball. But in either case, the left tackle is not blocking the defensive end. So, in this day and age of offenses, the left tackles are not as much one-on-one as the right tackles are just with the schemes that are being run on the offensive side. And I'm not saying the left tackles have to be great and are great football players, but I do think that it's a little bit overrated when everybody says left tackles, because if you look at this list, I promise you that there are two or three times more left tackles than any other position in that list if you're talking just offensive line.
Mitchell Schwartz is one of the most underrated football players in the NFL, and he's reliable too in terms of like he plays every snap damn near.
Yeah, I mean I like Eric Fisher. I think Eric Fisher is a very very a good football player. But Mitchell Schwartz is better. It's as simple as that. And I think Mitchell Schwartz is got to be in the top five offensive linemen in the league, in my book, and he didn't even make the top 100. So what does that tell you?
Yeah, the Chiefs players in the top 100, Frank Clark, 95, Chris Jones, 52, Tyron Matthew, 39, Tyreek Hill, 22, Travis Kelce, 18, Patrick Mahomes, 4.
Yeah. That's just offensive line, though. We're always forgotten. They always tell us. They always tell us there's a party. They just never tell us where it's at.
That was a story of my high school career.
Yep.
Well, but Schwartz never gets the credit he deserves, though.
No, he doesn't.
I mean, he's. They had that article where they ranked all the top 10 offensive tackles on ESPN and talked to GMs and personnel people and players. And he didn't make the top 10, and there were like three or four right tackles are on that list.
That's ridiculous.
If you
say he's not in the top 10 of tackles,
there's a lot
of boobs out there.
Let me ask you this, Grunny. I have another boobs, total boobs, if this is true too, though. I think part of it is because people get notoriety when they do something that you notice. And what he's so great at is not getting beat. He doesn't get beat on the sack, which is something you don't really notice. It used to be, you used to always hear about, well, the right side of your offensive line are the maulers. They're the ones you run behind. You run behind the right side and you pass protect on the left, so they want that right tackle is going to go pancake people. Mitchell Schwartz isn't out pancaking people on run plays. What he does is he doesn't get beat. And nobody notices that. Nobody cares.
And by the way, the Chiefs very rarely are looking for their offensive linemen to pancake anybody with the kind of schemes that they run.
Right.
You want to watch pancakers, go look at the Indianapolis Colts. That offense is going to get you pancakes.
And they get a ton of love for that. Oh, look at this video. Right. Look at him destroying his guy.
Right.
Well, Mitchell Schwartz doesn't go out there and destroy guys. He just doesn't let the guy pass him.
Because he's not asked to. You know, and
that's, which is that, more important, though.
But to your point, you're exactly right. A great offensive lineman doesn't get noticed. You don't want to be noticed as an offensive lineman.
There's only five tackles on that list. The first
he's
one.
He's not. Go ahead, Jake.
Go ahead.
So he's not physically dominant. He's technically dominant.
Yeah. Tunsil's on there, I bet.
Tunsil's the second one at 66. The highest rated offensive tackle on this list is David Bakhtiari from the Packers. He's at 62.
All right.
And then Tunsil's at 66. Ronnie Staley from the Ravens is 74. Tyron Smith from the Cowboys, 78. And Ryan Rimsky from the Saints is 82. Those are the tackles that are on that list. There were two offensive guards that were ranked higher than them.
Nelson.
Yes.
And who else?
And where'd he go? Nelson was at 29. Oh,
and the guy from the Texans, would it be... is it another Notre Dame guy too?
Zach Martin from the Cowboys. Martin. Those are the two guards that are on the list.
This is the dumb comment an NFL defensive coach made in the ESPN article. He doesn't pass any eyeball test, measurables or numbers. He's just so effective, off the charts in terms of football IQ. Hard to put him in the elite category. Why is it hard to put him in the elite category if he's off the charts in terms of football IQ and so effective?
That's what really you've got. Oh my gosh,
we got him going.
Measurables.
Now. We should have started with this.
Measurables in the NFL. Give me a physical break. Remember who used to say that? It was the guy on the reel? Give me a physical break. It's not about measurables anymore.
That's what I tell my wife all the time.
You can recruit with measurables. You know what? You can draft with measurables. But when you get on the field, nobody gives a crap of how big your hands are, how long your arms are, and how big you know what is.
Whoa. Oh.
Can you block? Can you dig it?
Timmy.
Unbelievable emotion from Tim Grunhardt. Timmy,
measurables.
Thank you very much for the time.
Stick your measurables somewhere.
Huh?
Easy there.
In your pipe and smoke it. I'm out.
Wow. On that note, back after this on WHB.